You're listening to Rico and the Man. With Rob Traegler and Peter Martino.
Welcome once again to Rico and the Man, a podcast that celebrates truth, justice, and all the bullshit showbiz topics we can pack in. I'm Rob Traegler, joined always by the Superman in my life, Mr. Peter Martino.
Hey, howdy, hey.
There he is. You know, as much as my childhood, Pete, was shaped by the likes of Spielberg and Lucas, there's probably nobody more influential than the great Richard Donner, who we just lost this week.
Yeah.
Great director, great filmmaker, of course, did Superman the movie, part of Superman 2 before he was fired.
Right.
And a ton of other great movies.
Yeah, you were always a Superman guy.
Yeah, I feel for like. Sure.
Yeah. You're definitely Jerry Seinfeld in that sense all the way.
What's but, the deal with Richard Donner dying?
What's the deal with Ned Beatty dying too?
What's the deal with Gene Hackman still alive?
No, but you were actually the first one I thought of when I read that news.
Yes, and you were very sweet. Sent me a text.
Yeah, of course, because I know certain celebrities, certain people mean a certain something to each of us.
Yeah.
Not just us, but just to, you know, anyone. And you have that connection with that certain celebrity, even though you never really met them. Although you apparently did.
I did. I got the chance to meet Richard Donner and tell him how much he meant to me. Basically, when I was a kid, like, Superman the movie was it. It was, you know, pre-Indiana Jones, pre-Star Wars, you know. Superman the movie with Christopher Reeve was everything. To the point that I literally wore down the VHS of Superman the movie. To the point where there were certain scenes where there was no audio track anymore. It was just a hiss. But I would still watch it, yeah. You know, obviously, this is 1,000 years ago before streaming or DVDs. So, you know, this little machine would wear out tapes. And I definitely wore out the Superman the movie tape. I do remember one time I was awake and my mom was still sleeping. And I, you know, went in the other room and started playing the opening, you know, playing the movie. And the opening credits started with the beautiful John Williams Superman march. And I just hear my mom in the other room like, no, anything else.
So you not only wore out the tape, you annoyed the fuck out of your mother by replaying this movie over and over again.
I wore out the tape. I wore out my mother, both with the tape and making her make me a Superman outfit when I was a little kid. Yeah, it was the best. It was the best. And Superman the movie really was the start of everything we know today in movies and superhero stories.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, in fact, here, I have a clip about Richard Donner from another very influential superhero movie icon.
Dick and his wife, Lauren, gave me my first unpaid job in Hollywood, my first part-time job in Hollywood, my first full-time job in Hollywood, and my first producing credit. The films Dick made inspired me to even want to go down that track. And, of course, in particular, Superman the movie is still, to this day, the archetype of the perfect superhero film origin story. And we watch it before we make almost any one of our films. And that's been the case for the past 17 years since I left the fold to go work for Marvel.
Yep, that's Kevin Feige. Got his start from Mr. Richard Donner.
Well, there you go. They're the king of superhero movies right now.
Yep.
Respecting the old king of superhero movies.
He was such a, like, big, like, voice in movies at that time. He directed The Omen, and then, you know, the producers of Superman called him because they loved The Omen so much. And I don't know how you watch The Omen and go, this guy's going to be great for Superman, but...
Yeah, I know.
Thank God they had that kind of foresight. He was just, like, the funniest guy, too. Like, I pulled some clips of him just talking about the whole beginning of him working on Superman and all this stuff. But even the first story where the Salkinds called him to direct Superman, here, I have this clip.
I was sitting on the toilet on a Sunday morning, and the phone rang, and this strange Hungarian voice said, "This is Alexander Salkind." He said, "I'm making Superman." I said, "Well, that's great. I would like you to direct it." He said, "I'll pay you $1 million." I said, "Hey, how are you? You know, where do you live and how do I get to you?" And I said, "You'll pay me $1 million." He said, "I'll pay you $1 million." He said, "It's two pictures." Aha. I was making $100,000. If that, I have Gene Hackman and Marlon Brando set. And so overnight, my life turned around. I got up, washed my hands, and I'd written it down on a little tiny card that was in the bathroom. It was a hairdresser's card. This girl that came to your house to cut hair. And I wrote down on the back of it, $1 million, which I don't even think I got enough zeros in. And I wrote Gene Hackman, Marlon Brando, the dates they were available, and Superman. That card today is still, it's the most important card of my life.
Wow.
Yeah, can you imagine?
What a story. I wonder where that card is now.
It's probably in his office at, because that's where, so I, when I worked at a production company, there was this guy who literally sat next to me in the office who was creating a documentary for HBO called Casting By. Mm-hmm. And it aired on HBO. Really good documentary. I recommend it. It's all about the casting process back then in the 70s and the 80s and how all these icons came to be through this one woman. But yeah, Donner and his wife, they had their own production company and they produced like all the X-Men movies. You know, they've done quite a lot of producing, but that's where they interviewed him for that Casting By documentary.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm sitting there in the office and the guy's like, "Yeah, we're doing Richard Donner next week." And I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "Huh?" And he's like, "Whoa." And I was like, "Yeah." And he invited me along. And I got to sit there while they interviewed Richard Donner. And I'm just like, and you know, his whole office has got, you know, the original Superman stills and props and just crazy shit. And
right
after the interview was over, you know, I took my shot and I just walked up to him and I said, "Mr. Donner, I just want you to know." And I told him how much I love Superman the movie and how much he was a part of my childhood and how much I wore out the VHS and pissed my mother off watching Superman over and over and over again.
Right.
And he just looked at me and he smiled and he said, "Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it?"
Oh, that's awesome. And that's a great story.
Yeah, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and you could just tell he was just still happy that that movie was still meaningful to people.
Yeah.
I have another clip of him talking about some of the people they wanted to cast as Superman. It's pretty fucking weird if you think about it. Here, listen.
Really?
The Salkinds wanted to go to Robert Redford and, I think Paul Newman and every major American star. And my problem with it was, I would have a very difficult time seeing them fly. If you didn't believe Superman could fly, then you didn't believe Superman was alive, was real. And he was still going to be a comic strip. And I felt we should go for an unknown.
Can you imagine being like a young director and they're like, "We're going to pay you $1 million to do two Superman movies," and you're fighting for an unknown in the lead role?
Right. Well, to his credit, he was absolutely right. I mean, I can't picture fucking Paul Newman on a wire.
Can you imagine like Robert Redford flying around?
No, he was absolutely right in that sense. I think he was right on the money.
Yeah.
And he made a great call.
Great fucking call. And here's him talking about Christopher Reeve.
We had made a costume out of a blue leotard and cut out an S and a red cape. The wardrobe lady had just thrown it together, and Chris was sweating like a stuck pig. The blue, there was black circles on him. The water was running down his arm. I took black shoe polish that actors used to use to touch out the gray, and we blacked his whole head. And this skinny little kid did a scene with various ladies who were up for the part of Lois Lane. And hands down, he was Superman from day one.
Yeah, awesome.
He's got a great voice. I never realized like how great his voice was.
Seriously, he's got that bravado voice. So you can see him like when you watch behind the scenes stuff, he's got that commanding director voice, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he looks like that guy who makes a lot of jokes on set, but you're too afraid to joke back.
Right. Yeah. Because he'll like beat your ass or scream at you or something.
Yeah. And, you know, he made all the Lethal Weapons, Lady Hawk, Scrooged with Bill Murray.
He did Scrooge?
Yep.
Wow. And let's face it. I mean, he's a dying breed as a, you know, as far as directors go.
Yeah, they don't make them like that anymore.
No, they don't make them like that. Seriously.
Yeah. And he was also, this is my favorite story. I was telling about the guy who was doing the HBO documentary. He had to interview Donner twice. They needed to do a pickup interview. And they wanted to talk more about Lethal Weapon with Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
Uh-huh.
And they had already talked to Mel Gibson. They had already done Donner once. And Danny Glover wouldn't return their calls. So
was he too old for this shit interview?
Well, as the story goes, it'll turn out he wasn't too old for that shit, because the first time they interviewed Donner, all he talked about was, anybody got a joint? Make this interview go a little better. And then we were laughing, ha ha ha, you know, and they're like, maybe Donner is a big pothead. And so they brought him a gift basket the second time. They went to his house to interview him. They brought him a gift basket. That was just an arrangement of different weed and buds and edibles. And at the end, they're all saying their goodbyes and this and that. And they were talking to him about how they couldn't hear back from Danny Glover because I guess he just didn't want to be interviewed. And he's like, oh, that's too bad. And they're about to leave. And he goes, wait a minute. And he looks at the basket. He goes, is this grass? And they're like, yeah. He's like, give me that phone. He calls Danny Glover up, says, you better talk to these people today. And literally they went from his house to a hotel to meet Danny Glover to interview him.
Get out, really? Yeah. Because of the weed?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
He's like, he was like, wow, you people are awesome. Let me call Danny Glover right now. And he could just hear him with that big gravelly voice, like, you know. Danny, it's Richard Donner, and you better talk to these people right now.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Yeah, I saw him recently, actually, on that Josh Gad internet, what's it called? The
Reunited Apart.
Rewind. Reunited Apart. And he appeared on the Goonies episode. And And honestly, I didn't even know he was still alive until he popped up on there. But yeah, he was still with it, and he, you know, good memory of everything. And yeah, supposedly he was, you know, getting frustrated with all the kids and stuff, but they were like continued to rag on him and everything, kind of get on his nerves. But yeah, it was interesting to see his take on the Goonies, because I never really listened to him talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, he directed the Goonies, but a lot of people don't remember that. You know, anything that Spielberg produces kind of overshadows the director of that movie.
Right.
You know, you always think, oh, Spielberg directed Poltergeist. Spielberg directed Goonies. It's like, no.
Yeah. Well, didn't he kind of take over? I know we're sidelining
Poltergeist,
here. Didn't he kind of take over Poltergeist?
Yeah, he pretty much directed Poltergeist.
He pretty much directed Poltergeist.
Yeah. Sorry, Toby Hooper. Also, rest in peace, Toby Hooper.
R.I.P.
But we're not talking about Toby right now.
No, we're not.
But
sorry.
But no. This is from Spielberg. Dick had such a powerful command of his movies and was so gifted across so many genres. Being in his circle was akin to hanging out with your favorite coach, smartest professor, fiercest motivator, most endearing friend, staunchest ally, and of course, the greatest Goonie of all. He was all kid, all heart, all the time. I can't believe he's gone, but with his husky, hearty laugh, it will stay with me always.
That's great.
Here's a fun fact. So this guy, Harry Lang, who Stanley Kubrick hired for 2001: A Space Odyssey, he was also hired by George Lucas as an art director on Star Wars, but he also did Superman a year later. And if you look at Krypton with Marlon Brando and all that stuff, the control panels are all Imperial control panels. And the kryptonite was kept in the very same prop chest that the Anakin Skywalker lightsaber emerged from. So
get out, really?
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, think about it. It's like, oh, I have to go into space again on a planet. I'm going to steal Star Destroyer controllers. And, oh, we're in Krypton. Look at me. I'm a genius.
Just going to use this again. There you go, Mr. Brando. Yeah.
Is this the Millennium Falcon controls? No. The Krypton controls.
It's so interesting, though, that the star of the movie had the third billing after Brando and Gene Hackman.
Yep. And Marlon Brando made $3 million. I think it was for a day and a half or something of work.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. For reading cue cards.
Yeah. He literally taped the lines to the other actors.
Yeah. On top of their forehead and shit.
You got to stand a little closer to me so I can read my lines. That's my Brando. Isn't it good?
You got to stand closer to me. Not quite as good as your Owen Wilson, but it's still pretty good.
Oh, Jarrell, we're on Krypton.
All right.
Oh, wow. These controls look familiar.
No, they don't. You just hear him off camera.
You hear this Lang guy off camera. Nope. No, that's Kryptonian. Whoa, isn't this Anakin lightsaber? Nope.
I thought it was interesting to hear Donner talk about $1 million paycheck for directing a movie. That was such a big paycheck back then.
I know. I mean,
now they spend $1 million on the catering.
Yeah, now they spend $1 million on the piece of paper they send with the offer.
Well, like I said, I know he had a big impact on your childhood, and that's why I want to send you my condolences as soon as I heard.
I appreciate that, Pete. It meant a lot.
Of course. See how I think of you and your feelings?
Yes.
What do you think about me? Do you ever think about me?
Sorry.
Did you call me on the 4th of July and wish me a happy Independence Day? No.
How was your 4th of July?
It was all right. No, it was good. I had my niece's graduation party that day, but so they kind of, did a 4th of July themed graduation party. But the fucking neighbors with the fireworks, though, thank God I didn't go to my town's offering of the fireworks, because you didn't need to go at all. You could just be in your neighborhood and they have a whole fucking fireworks
just
display
look
going
up.
On. Just look up and it's there. But I actually had a question for you.
Mm.
Because I know you have a lot of pets,
yes.
A lot of animals in your household. And I just want to know what your take is on this whole fireworks and scaring dogs and that whole debate that seems to be growing more and more each year.
Well, here's what I'll say. I know you have kids and fireworks are cool to look up at and it's a thing to do every year. But fuck fireworks, okay? It's stupid. It's stupid. You can put on the TV and watch some fireworks. It's twofold for me because, I've got dogs. They hate fireworks. They think they're being attacked. A lot of dogs run away. People lose their pets because of fireworks.
Right.
I don't know what idiot's letting their dog just be out and about during fireworks, but not to mention I live in Fire Fucking Alley out in Southern California. So
they go apeshit there?
Well, they should go apeshit because we constantly have those fucking wildfires. Sometimes they're started by morons with fireworks.
Okay.
We had these idiots a couple months ago did a gender reveal and then a million acres all of a sudden burned up.
That's why I'm asking, because I feel like a lot of people are not even necessarily people that have pets or dogs or anything like that. I just feel like people are like wanting to cancel fireworks now. Like,
yeah.
It's a new thing to cancel.
I'm not saying cancel fireworks. Fireworks are great if you shoot them over the water. They're great if you, you know, right. are in a climate where they can be handled properly.
Right.
But out here, just stop. Knock it off.
Don't do it.
You really need to see that bullshit up there, don't you?
But my thing is, like, it's fine, like, around the 4th of July. Like, maybe the weekend of the 4th of July and obviously on 4th of July. It doesn't have to be an all-summer event. You don't have to have fireworks going on every single night in the summer. And that's what I feel like it's gotten to. It's not, like, special anymore. It's not, like, a 4th of July thing. It's, like, just now it's turning into a summer thing where it's, like, all summer long. All you hear are fireworks.
Right.
And well, yeah. That's what I don't get.
Every holiday seems to just bleed now.
Anymore.
Every holiday bleeds into like the entire year. That's the same reason. It's like you got fireworks all summer. When it hits September, you're walking through the grocery store and it's like, you know, it's the most wonderful time. What?
They're just going through the motions now. They're showing fucking Christmas shows on Lifetime Network. They're doing a Christmas in July all summer long, all month long. It's like, what's the point?
I saw that the other day, you know.
I was like, are you serious? I heard like a Christmas song and I started getting anxiety. I was like, why are they playing this now when it's the 4th of July?
It's like summer Santathon. So why?
Yeah. Like, nothing's special anymore. Nothing's isolated. It's just like it. Like you said, everything just bleeds into everything else.
Fucking fireworks! That was my father growing up, by the way. You know, if he was trying to hang a picture, if he was trying to fix a VCR, if he was trying to fix a radio, change a tire. Jesus Christ!
I can't even judge him because I'm the exact same way.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm bad when I get frustrated. I start going off. Yeah.
I can't see you going off. I can't.
Come on.
You're a mild-mannered guy. I've never seen you go off.
No, you're the mild-mannered guy. I feel like I have a short fuse.
Get the fuck out of here.
Talk to my children and my wife. What's the worst you've ever seen your dad?
Oh,
but
God.
He was trying to, like, fix something or do something.
He had this shitty fucking BMW that we were driving in the rain. And the wipers, you know, wipers going back and forth. Driving in the rain in New Jersey when it rains every other goddamn day. And all of a sudden, the wipers just go off the car into the field, into the street. And I just have this memory being a little kid sitting in like a Wawa parking lot watching my dad retrieve windshield wipers in the middle of the highway. Just, you know. Thanks a lot. You know, and.
A-E-I-O-U. Sometimes why?
L-M-N-O-P. Yeah. So,
well, could I tell the audience the worst I've ever seen you get anger wise?
I think I have an idea, but go ahead.
I don't know if I told this story on the podcast yet, but we were coming back from AC late one
night.
I know
where you're going.
I forgot what your car was at the time.
But Chevy Malibu, 1998.
Okay, there you go. Apparently, you're having trouble with the window on, I believe it was the driver's side, back seat. And for some reason, that night, we're having trouble with it again, and we couldn't get it back. We got it to go down, but we couldn't get it to go back up. And it was pouring rain that night. Cold, I think. It was a cold,
like,
rainy.
It was like winter time.
Miserable night.
With a two-hour drive ahead of us.
Yeah. And you're trying to get this damn window up and you couldn't get it up and we're just like all cold and like tired and we had this fucking window open blasting cold air and we're just all miserable. And finally, you lost. I don't know what you did, but I just remember you like yelling and cursing. And that was like really the only time that I saw you get like really pissed off and like lose it. But other times I thought you were like very mild mannered and just kind of like, all right, this happened, so let's try to do this.
Well, let's be fair, that you only really knew me for those couple of years. But on our phone, to refute my statements, is my father.
Here he is.
Rob Tregler, hey. Senior.
Rico and the man.
What's up, man?
As opposed to Rico and the man, it's Rico and the man.
That's what I mean. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. That hurricane heading your way there?
They say Friday it's supposed to hit by us. But
just heavy rain, though, huh?
Yeah, I don't think it's anything too serious, but who knows?
Good.
Fucking Elsa.
I know. Elsa.
Have you ever heard a hurricane that does sound threatening? Ever?
Yeah, I know, right?
I know.
It's like Hurricane Andrew. Ooh.
even Eleanor.
Yeah. Like, why can't it be like Hurricane Thor or, you know, yeah. Like Hurricane Thanos is coming. I guess they do it so you don't get scared. I get it, but
Hurricane kill you.
I know. The one that wiped out the seaside boardwalk was Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah.
I was telling Pete, like, so apparently Pete has this short fuse when he's, you know, trying to do stuff and is constantly, you know, Jesus Christ, and this and that. And I'm like, I've never seen it. But I said, that was my whole childhood. Anytime my dad needed to hang a picture or put a VHS tape in a VCR.
You're taking it a little too far.
I told Rob, though, that I could totally sympathize with that. So I can't even judge you for that because I'm the exact same way.
I don't know, like, and I have no defense to that, but it was like every time I put a tape in, geez.
No, yeah. I know. I'm being outrageous, but I did tell him about the time that the BMW windshield wipers just flew off the car in the rain
and started carving X's and O's into my windshield.
Yeah, that's the other part. Pete, the wipers flew off, but the metal hooks that held them stayed,
man.
And started carving
you
a
didn't
circle.
Say that.
I had to have my windshield replaced because I had these like X's and O's.
Oh, come on. How could you blame him, though, for being pissed at that?
I'm not blaming anyone. I just was saying it was a story.
Well, can I offer an explanation as to why I think I'm like that? And maybe it'll go to you too, but I don't have time for things to go wrong. I have a long list of shit that I need to get accomplished. And when one thing goes wrong and I'm wasting my time focusing on that thing, it's frustrating as hell because like I'm trying to cross something off my list and it's right. Not letting me cross that off the list. That's the thing, because I'm constantly feel like I need to do stuff and I have to get stuff done. And when things aren't getting done, that's when I get frustrated and I get pissed off.
Little stupid thing, like I'll be working on my guitar and repairing it and stuff, and I'll have this Allen wrench next to me, and I'll do something and I'll go to find it. It was just here, you know, and I look for a good
totally.
10 minutes for the Allen wrench that I was just using. And it turns out it's like, hidden behind something, you know what I mean, or under my foot, you know what I mean?
Sure, yeah, oh, absolutely.
I flip for no apparent reason. I don't flip, but it's just like the absurdity of the fact that it was just here, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not so much like I'm mad, that really mad. I'm just mad at the absurdity more than the event.
Yeah, it's like
event.
An annoyance thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, I don't need this right now. Thing.
Right.
And you, especially with two kids under the age of what, 7?
Yeah, they're both under the age of 10, and it's just like, it's tough. Yeah, they're 7 and they're 3. And right. That's another thing. I constantly feel like I'm on a time crunch. Like, if I don't get this done, I'm going to get distracted with, you know, something that they're doing, and it's going to take me away, and I'm never going to get it done. So it's right. Just like, you know, That's another reason why I'm so anxious, is that I constantly feel like I'm always rushing. Like, whether I'm eating a fucking yogurt or trying to put, like, a lawnmower together. You know what I mean? It's just, like, I constantly feel like I'm on, like, a time clock.
You know, Dad, we were just talking about Richard Donner, who you introduced me to.
I was thinking about him today. Like, I remember he had a couple misfires in the 80s, like Lady Hawk with Matthew Broderick and Michelle Pfeiffer, some kind of, like, it tried to be some medieval BS, but it was ooh.
Lethal Weapon 2 through 4.
Yeah. Well, 2's good. 2's good because that's the diplomatic immunity one. I have diplomatic immunity.
I don't even know Lethal Weapon all that well.
Yeah, you shouldn't, because it's
Mel Gibson's hard to revisit.
It's the Mel Gibson curse. Like, that's what I'm telling you. This weekend they had The Patriot for $4.99. I love that movie. That movie's one of the best Revolutionary War movies because there are hardly any. But anyway, but I couldn't buy it because I can't support Mel.
Do you remember Rob watching Superman when he was little Rob?
I was telling
over
Chris,
and over
I
again.
Was telling Chris that I said, you know, when you texted me that Richard Donner died, and I said, you don't know Rob and the relationship with Superman. I said, when he was a kid, he'd fucking run around the neighborhood in the costume, you know what I mean, fighting crime, whether it was a tree or.
fighting crime, whether it was a tree or a mailbox or a cat
or a neighborhood kid
or a bush.
It was in on the gate, because a lot of neighborhood kids enjoyed it. They were like, I'll be the villain, you know what I mean? Remember that, Rob?
Right.
Yeah, no. So
I do. And my unhealthy relationship with Superman the movie, for sure.
I know, yeah.
Definitely.
I know this is going to get cut out, but it was. And you know what? If like a lot of parents were like, you need to talk to your child about the costume. You know what? To me, it was like, what the frick? Let the kid, you know, let him express himself.
It's creativity.
Know, the cop's going to pull up and let's go, you know.
I love when kids use their imagination now.
Thank you.
Do something creative instead of being on the fucking
I've seen girls wheel walking around in Frozen costumes, and I'm like, good for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was the original cosplayer, okay?
Right. Thank you. He was.
Long before there was a Comic-Con, I was out there in costume in the fucking neighborhoods of New Jersey fighting trees and crime. That's what that movie meant to me is the spirit of imagination. Even the tagline, you'll believe a man can fly. I believed Christopher Reeve was flying around. You watch that movie now and you're like, this is horrible special effects. But at the time, what they did was groundbreaking. It was like Star Wars. It was, you know, the special effects were next level. And you'll believe a man can fly. Richard Donner made me believe that I could fly.
You know,
I believe I can fly.
And the sad thing for me is the very first time I saw that movie, it had been out for a while, and I was like, Superman. It was like, I was kind of dissing it. And I forgot, you know, because I wasn't a director follower back then, you know what I mean? So I didn't know Donner had directed it. So I'm just like, oh, come on, Superman. It's probably like Flash Gordon, you know what I mean? And so the first time I saw it was at the drive-in, and I was riveted. I was in the front seat of my van. I remember watching it. When he caught that helicopter, it was like goosebumps, you know what I mean?
Oh, God. You know, that's, and it's also one of the greatest Williams cues in all of Williams' catalog, too, is when he fucking catches that helic. Because that's the 1-2 punch of that scene. Like, he catches Lois, and you're like, holy shit, he caught Lois. This is the best. That's awesome. He could have flown up to the roof with, and that was it, and it would be awesome. But the fact that he added, then the helicopter falls.
Yeah,
right.
And he catches it. And that's the first time you see Superman's real strength as an adult. And the people on the ground cheering and shit, like, it's just it's goosebumps. It's a goosebump moment.
Yep,
it's a moment that movies don't have anymore.
Thank you, Richard Donner.
Sadly,
yes. Thank you, Richard Donner, and thank you, Dad, for calling in. Having said that, they're gonna do 87 new Superman movies. You know, they're working on Batgirl. They're working on a new Batman with Pattinson and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, superheroes, they're always going to keep redoing. I'm sure about that. But one thing that I don't understand that doesn't need a universe, that doesn't need a fucking background story, is fucking Willy Wonka. And I just saw that Timothy Chalamet has been cast in a prequel to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And first off, the first thing I have to say is that we're going to lose a lot of listeners because I fucking hate Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Nope. I love Gene Wilder. I love him. I love everything he's ever done except that movie, because that movie is fucking stupid.
Now, what do you hate about it, though, specifically?
I get that the, you know, the, what is it? The seven deadly sins. I get all the symbolism of killing the kids. I get that. You know, even some of the songs I really love. I have PTSD from that movie because every time in grade school, when it fucking rained, we had to sit in a fucking room with that CRT fucking TV on the fucking rack that they wheel in. We had to watch Willy fucking Wonka.
Really?
In the fucking Chocolate Factory.
That was the movie they chose?
Like every time. Like every fucking time. And so I am not like a casual watcher of Willy Wonka.
Right.
I watched that goddamn movie like 87 times when I was a kid. And when I was a little fucking 8-year-old watching, I was like, it's fucking stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
Because A, look, it makes sense as a book. It does. It makes sense as a book. It's a great thing for kids to read because, you know, there's a lot of lesson learning and this and that. But when you turn into a movie with the fucking orange little people running around and the way they cut it bugged me, it creeped me the fuck out, and not in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's a movie that warrants a remake or a reincarnation or anything like that. To me, it was just one of those movies that, like, you know, everyone grew up with and everyone has a knowledge of, but I don't think it should be anything more than that, really.
To me, it's a stain on Gene Wilder's career. No, I'm just no. I mean, I'm not trying to be down on Willy Wonka. I just cannot believe the absolute lengths that Hollywood is going to try and take certain properties and reinvigorate them. They did that with it. Tim Burton tried that with Johnny Depp.
It was awful.
You know, they did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And honestly, I kind of liked his take on Wonka a little bit more. He was a creep. He wasn't this, like, you know, cool guy until the last minute. And he's like, I murder children. But, like, you always looked at him like, he might murder children. But
yeah.
In that movie, they all survive. So what's the lesson? But
well, do they die in the? They don't die in the original one. So he just kind of gets rid of them.
Well, you never hear from him again, do you?
Well, you only hear from the kids in the Tim Burton version.
Yes, you do.
You do. At the end, they come
back? At the end, they all walk out of the chocolate factory.
Oh God, I don't even together. Remember that.
Yeah. So there's an even less of a lesson in the Burton one, which is weird because he always tends to strive even to go darker.
Right.
But yeah, no, in the original, you never see those kids again.
Yeah, that's true.
Right?
No, you definitely don't see them at the end of the movie. I think that movie came out at the perfect time. It came out in the early 70s where, like, you know, this generation
shit was weird.
Shit was weird, and it was kind of like one of the last, like, musicals to come out before, like, musicals became obsolete in the theater. So I feel like it just kind of it got in there, like, right under the wire before, like, you know, shit started to get gritty, and it with 70s cinema and Taxi Driver and, you know, The Godfather and all those movies came out. But
yeah, you weren't seeing Wonka shoot some kids in the head.
No. But yeah, it's just a movie that people grew up with, and then if you go back and watch it as an adult, it's one of those movies where you're like, this is fucking weird.
Hollywood is showing us all their cards and saying, we don't know what to do anymore. Yeah. We don't know what to do. If it has a name we've heard of before, we're going to do it. Like Willy Wonka. So who's the it kid right now? Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
It's, you know, like he don't want to, he doesn't want to do it.
But he's going to do it because ka-ching, 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 ka-ching.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't know. It just, it makes me, well, I don't know. I feel a song coming on, Pete. A song I want to sing about this topic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm feeling it right now. All right. It's like a musical in my head.
Go for it.
Movies suck, 'cause they're stuck with no sense of real imagination. It's not fair, no one cares about Reboot Nation. If you want to save Hollywood, simply write a script that's new. Any fresh idea will do. Fast and Furious 10, I can't sit through. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yeah.
Hold on, I'm wiping away my tears. That was beautiful.
It's crazy. I always wondered how musicals do that, but I guess you just get a vibe, you know?
You gotta get a vibe.
It's a vibe. It's a vibe. It's just something that comes out of, you know.
That was good.
No franchise left that can stand a sequel or a remake. Why can't we get to see someone's fresh take? If you want to save Hollywood, don't just think about the money. Anything that's new or funny, pretty, pretty, please. Join me, Pete. Movies suck, 'cause they're stuck. No more guts and no more glory. Even Spiels is rehashing West Side Story.
West Side Story.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That was beautiful. You know what's funny, though, about Hollywood, though? Like, all right, they're obviously out of ideas for making original movies.
Right.
There's other books out there that they can make into movies that were never made into movies before. Why do they have to reuse the same books that were already made into movies and make them into more movies out of that? Like, at least pick another book to make a movie out of. Like, how
there's
many?
There's a billion books.
There's a billion books out.
Really good books.
Yeah. But yeah, Hollywood is lost. They're just lost with originality.
If it's too new, no one cares. If it's too much of an homage, no one cares. So what's the tightrope? What's the little sliver of people are going to dig this that you have to hit? Whereas a new movie, we'd all just show up.
Right.
Timothy Chalamet. Think of this kid. I mean, like, you know, he was in Call Me By Your Name, you know, with Armie Hammer, which was a whole other episode. But great actor. Great actor. Something original. Something new. Based on a book.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, Dune. Seen it. Wonka. Yeah. Seen it. What's next? He's going to be Iron Man Jr. Timothy Chalamet.
Steve Martin Short Chalamet Chase.
Chase. Martin Short Martin Steve Chevy Paul Simon Chalamet. It's only 70s SNL, except for Chalamet. It can't exceed the 70s.
Yeah, you gotta throw one newbie in there.
Yeah. Steve Martin, Chase, Chevy Chase, Murray, Bill, Cameron Diaz.
Beaver.
Justin, Chase, Martin, Short, Bieber. Ah, rest in peace, Don Pardo. We're getting old, man. I thought about this earlier. Like, when I met Richard Donner, I never thought about him dying. I just didn't. It's just not what didn't hit me that way. It's like, this guy's, you know, a legend. He's just going to live forever, you know?
He's immortal. I mean,
he's immortal. Exactly. Like, and, you know, Harrison Ford's 78, and he looks better than I do. So I'm not saying that people are dropping like flies, but I mean, Don Pardo, all these people that were kind of an institution.
Yeah.
They're disappearing. Charles Grodin, like, you don't think about Charles Grodin, like, oh, he's not here anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because, like, the, you know, the actors and actresses that our parents, like, grew up with, they're mostly all gone. And now we're getting to the point where, like, the actors and actresses that we grew up with are starting to, like,
yeah,
drop off. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's, I don't know, it's a weird time. It's a weird transition.
We're definitely being faced with more of the reality of mortality, for sure. Because, you know, when it was like, when we were kids and it's, you know, Johnny Carson died, it's like, fuck Carson.
Yeah.
But if Conan died, it would be a whole thing.
Oh, God forbid. Yeah, but Conan was like our, even like Letterman, I think, kind of preceded our generation. But Conan was like the talk, the first talk show host that was like for our generation. You know what I mean?
Well, what people don't remember is that it was a bumpy fucking road for Conan those first few years at NBC.
And talk about underdog.
Oh, he was constantly being threatened with being completely fired and taken off the air. And I do believe that people like us, the people who were done with the Lenos and the Lettermans, I think that us late night kids are what kept Conan on the air, because it was right before the birth of that alternative internet watching where things could be weird. Things could be left of center. Things could be kind of strange but funny. And Conan was the only one doing that on late night network television. And thank God for us college kids who relied on that, because there was no YouTube to watch some influencer be silly.
Right. He always said that there's a very hard tightrope to walk between being silly and being doing really smart comedy. And I think he walked that tightrope beautifully. He just did a great job at doing really silly, smart comedy all throughout his career, starting from, you know, the Late Show to even when he got the Tonight Show, which he got fucked over, to a CBS show. And his podcast is great too. So he's got a great interviewing style. He's a brilliant writer and he's just a great, great ad-libber too. He's just awesome, and I'm interested to see what he does with HBO Max now.
Yeah, he's like us. That's how you look at Conan.
Yeah, totally.
You know, you look at him like, wow, what if one of us got a talk show?
Right.
And the humility is what I loved about Conan.
Yeah.
You know, I love Letterman too, but he had that aura of I'm the smartest guy in the room, no matter what.
Sure.
Conan was the opposite. Like, he showed every part of his insecurities, even, you know, like when he was interviewing these amazing, amazing guests, he always seemed like he was like not worthy.
Right. He's definitely one of the few celebrities that I would actually want to hang out with and I think would be enjoyable to hang out with. But did you ever see his documentary?
Conan Can't Stop?
Yeah, before.
Great documentary. Great
documentary.
Look it up on Netflix, people. Great doc.
And it's a great insight into him. Yeah. But great documentary. And yeah, he was also always one of my faves, and I consider the best talk show host.
I can't see a more, like, talk about a talk show host in the face of adversity. I mean, you go on, everyone wants to cancel you for your first 3 years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden your show becomes a hit because of people like us who are like, finally, there's a late night show for us.
Yeah. College-age kids.
Then fucking asshole cunthead Jay Leno says, yeah. Oh, Conan, he's going to take over the Tonight Show, you know, and then Conan's biggest dream of all time comes true. He's hosting the Tonight Show, and NBC fucking says it's not rating like Leno, and fuckhead Leno comes back and takes back over the Tonight Show. What a fucking asshole. I'm sorry. Like, I'm not a Leno fan just because of that.
Yeah, fuck Leno.
Like, but fuck Leno.
Didn't they want to put Leno on like a half hour before
they did.
Conan to give they him like did. A lead in? Oh,
they did for the whole first fucking season of The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien. Fucking Leno still before him.
They didn't even give him a chance with that show at all.
No, they didn't. They didn't.
Over. They gave him no breathing room at all.
And there's one guy in the situation who could have kept Conan doing The Tonight Show, and that was Jay Leno. He could have said,
give him
a chance. Give him a chance. Right. No, I'm a company man. NBC, fuck Conan. He can do, you know, he can go off into obscurity. I'm going back to do the Tonight Show. And whatever. Fuck Jay Leno, man, because he's that same guy. I know Jay Leno. I've worked with Jay Leno a million times. Not the real Jay Leno, but people just like him.
Right. He's the worst kind of scumbag, too. He's the guy that acts like, you know, the nice guy.
It's not my fault. You know?
Yeah.
It's not me. Just completely passing the buck.
They're the shadiest fucks behind the scenes.
Yeah. I mean, Conan probably would have been more successful to stay put.
Yeah. That's what Howard said.
Yeah. I agree with that 1,000,000%. Like,
you just do what you want. You don't have all that pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But
he got that with TBS, I think.
He did
get
that, but I mean, he had to go through
also
that whole embarrassing
cable
thing.
And, you know, he got lost there for a while, which bummed me out. And he deserved to be on network television. He deserved the Tonight Show. We all grew up with him. We were the new viewers of the Tonight Show, and then he went away, and then all the old ass fucks came back for Leno.
Yeah.
Fuck old people.
Cancel. Fuck the senior citizens. But you know, in the end, I think Conan will be better remembered than Jay Leno will ever be. So.
Well, Conan, yeah, because Conan was unique.
Yeah.
Jay Leno was just like a Johnny Carson cocksucker.
For Jay Leno, I never thought he was funny. I always thought he was the worst out of all the talk show hosts. Just his interviewing style. He just wasn't witty. He wasn't funny. His jokes weren't funny. Like, I never understood his appeal. But
well, listen, when you're the host of The Tonight Show and Howard Stern comes on and has lesbians making out, you get up and leave?
Yeah.
You're not funny. You can't play. You can't play with the best of them.
No.
You're a company man. You're a company man.
He doesn't know how to entertain at all.
He was a good stand-up.
Unless it's on his terms.
Back in the day. He was a good stand-up. He had good jokes. But he in no way should have taken over the Tonight Show. Should have been Letterman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Watch the late shift. But,
another recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
We're just chock full of recommendations tonight.
It's the recommendations hour. And speaking of hour, we've gone almost an hour. So let's wrap it up. I'd like to thank my dad for calling in. I'd like to thank Pete. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Rico and the Man. We want to hear from you. Send us an email at ricomanpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at Rico and the Man and on Instagram at Rico and the Man Pod. Don't bother following us on Facebook because Facebook is an awful place in the darkest corners of humanity.